Well, for the lectionary nerds among you, of which I realize I might be the only one, you will realize that once every 3 years in the Episcopal Church, we end up spending 5 weeks during the summer on John chapter 6. John chapter 6 is the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. And then it's the subsequent story of the whole conversation that interprets what in the world that means. So this is week 1 of 5, in which we are going to be talking about John chapter 6. Now, I have to confess that I am partial to this part of the church year because it was exactly the repetition of this story week after week that was happening when I first came back to church. And through it, I experienced a real sense of healing and nourishment that I would not have had it only been 1 week. So, you know, bear with us as we talk about it for 5 weeks. We're all really familiar with the story. Well, maybe we're not. Maybe some. How many of you don't really know the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish? This is a shame-free zone. So if you don't know it, raise your hand. All right, there's a couple. That's good. So this is new to you. Fabulous. To the rest of us, we've heard it probably from a few times to a lot of times. And I'm hoping that we can unpack it today a little bit in a way that is new. First of all, you all may know there are 4 Gospels in the Bible, 4 books that tell the story of Jesus in different ways. The first 3, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are pretty similar. The 4th is John, and it's radically different from the others. It portrays Jesus. It tells different stories. It has different themes about who he is and what he's doing. And although the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 appears in all 4 Gospels, in John it has a really unique meaning. And so we're going to begin to talk about that today. So I hope you can bear with me. I want to set the stage for the next 5 weeks by giving you some information about the theme of John's gospel that will help us unpack it. In John's gospel, Jesus is understood as having a very specific purpose. His purpose is to come and reveal God. The first chapter of John's gospel says, "No one has ever seen God, but Jesus, God the only Son, who resides close to the Father's heart, has made him known." So Jesus does 7 signs in John's gospel, and each of those signs is meant to show a different aspect of who God is. But all of them have one thing in common. They reveal God's abundance, God's fullness, God's extravagant generosity. In the first chapter of John, it says, "Of Jesus' fullness, we have all received grace upon grace." Jesus says in John 10, "I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly." I mean, the first sign Jesus does in John's gospel is to turn water into wine so wedding people can party longer. I mean, this is what God is doing. And in this sign, Jesus is taking the meager lunch of a little boy and turning it into enough food for 5,000 people to eat all that they want out of. So over and over in John's gospel, there's this portrayal of an extravagant God, a God who can do abundantly more than we can ever imagine. This is who Jesus makes known to us. So I want you to keep that in mind for the next 5 weeks. And there's one other thing that I want you to keep in mind for the next 5 weeks, and it is the following question. What are you hungry for? What are you hungry for? If Jesus is the bread of life, the bread is meant to nourish us in areas that we're hungry. So how in the world in the next 5 weeks are we going to make a connection between what it is that we hunger for and the things we usually use to fill our hunger and Jesus, the bread of life? All right, so that's the beginning. Now let's talk about a few things that are unique about the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 in John's gospel. One of the ways I like to enter into a Bible story is to imagine myself as one of the characters. So if you were going to imagine yourself as one of the characters in this story, I wonder who you'd identify most with. Like, who do you intuitively identify with in this story? Is it Jesus? The little boy? I'm guessing most of us, many of us, might identify with Philip. Philip is a money manager. He's very good at it. He would definitely have been on the vestry if he was, you know, alive today. Philip just, Jesus asked the question to test him, where are we going to get money to buy food for all these people? And Philip is like, what are you talking about? 6 months' wages wouldn't buy enough for them to have a bite. I know that feeling, don't you? When you look out at the world's needs, don't you feel overwhelmed and like, you know, there's really nothing I can do about that? And that's true, actually. So Philip is like a lot of us. We're good, well-meaning people. We see the masses, right? We see the world's poor. We want to help. We don't know how. Well, what happens next? One thing that's unique about John's gospel is that in this gospel, unlike in the other ones, it's Jesus himself who feeds the 5,000. He doesn't give the food to the disciples who then feed the 5,000. He does it, okay? Second thing I want to point out, is it Philip's lunch that Jesus uses to feed the 5,000? No, it's a little boy's who is one of the 5,000. It's Andrew seeing the resources that already exist in the community that they're sent to and pointing it out. Those resources are what is used to nourish all of them, including, by the way, the 12 disciples, who each get a basket of leftovers at the end, right? I'm pointing all this out because I want to tell you a few stories about how I think this might work in today's world. You and I might be like Philip, or maybe we won't. Maybe we're more like the little boy, or maybe we're more like the crowds, you know, lurking around Jesus, wondering what in the world he's up to. But for those of us like Philip, I want to tell a story. Most of you know that I've spent a lot of time listening to homeless young adults in Minneapolis. And during the time that I was doing that, I had a program that I was going to Youth Link for 3 days, and one day a week I would go to a supervisor and a group and talk about my experience. And I remember telling my supervisor, I feel totally useless at Youth Link. Totally useless. Because I'm sitting there and I have no program, I have no resources, I have no expertise, I have nothing to give them. I have nothing at all. Like, I don't even know how to call for shelter. I don't know anything. And the youths would come up to me and they would say, who are you and what are you here for? You know, meaning like, you know, what do you have to offer me? And I would say, I'm a volunteer and I'm here to listen to you. And a lot of times they would look at me and go, huh, and walk away. You know, and I felt like an idiot. And so I told this to my supervisor, and I remember saying, I don't look like them. I don't talk like them. I don't have the same life experiences. I don't have anything to offer. I don't belong. And you know what she said to me? She said, good. I'm not going to take that experience away from you. I'm not going to rescue you from that experience because you know what? Now you might have a tiny inkling of what it's like to live their life every day. And so it was in my very lack, in my very hunger, that I could begin to relate across lines of difference to people who are suffering. But that's not enough. So I want to tell you another story. Sorry. There is a great book. In fact, it was recommended to me by you, Patricia. It's called God is in the City. And it is a book about a young couple, Sean and his wife, who moved to the west side of Chicago to do urban ministry. And for the first 6 months that they were there in this part of town that had a higher concentration of poverty and crime and whatnot, they tried everything they could think of to fit in to no avail. They tried and tried to connect with people, and people were not interested. So finally, after 6 months, they decided maybe they heard God wrong and they weren't sent there. And they would try one more time. And so they threw themselves into the life of the local church. And turns out there were a couple guys at the church named Stanley and Willie. Stanley and Willie found out that Sean loved drumming. And Sean had done drumline when he was in high school. So they offered him two opportunities to volunteer. They said, you can play drums in the church band, and you can volunteer with local kids in a drum line, and the local kids have loved ones who are incarcerated, and so you can volunteer with them. And finally, Sean started to connect because he was doing something he loved with people who loved it too. So they had something in common. And he was so moved by this new sense of belonging that he decided to get up and share at church, which is something their church did a lot. They all stood up and gave testimonies about how God was operational in their life. So he stood up and he started crying. And he said, I have felt so lonely and isolated and not belonging. And I've not known how to connect here. But Stanley and Willie gave me a grace I didn't deserve and offered me a chance to volunteer with you. And I am so grateful. And after that, the church basically mobbed the couple. They showed up and they were like, here's my phone number and come over to my house for dinner. And, you know, so they were embraced and adopted by the community. And, you know, looking back at it, Sean writes in this book, God is in the City, he thinks it's when he reached the end of his own rope that God, the extravagantly generous, abundant God, was able finally to show up in his life because he had quit using his own resources to try to fit in. I think when we look at the story of the loaves and fishes, it's precisely that Philip was right. Of course they couldn't feed all those people, but God could. And somehow in the encounter, Philip and the disciples and Sean and me at YouthLink have experienced a kind of transformation and conversion away from seeing ourselves as benefactors to the world's poor, and instead as seeing ourselves as equally in need of an abundant, extravagant God. So we're about to embark on a year-long pilgrimage with the High Commitment Discernment Team here at St. Matthew's. We're going to do some experiments in the neighborhood with neighbors who are marginalized. And I think we'll all be tempted to see ourselves as benefactors. But I can guarantee you that if you work with any length of time with people who are struggling, we will come to the end of our rope. And rightly so. Because it's exactly there that God shows up and transforms us and converts us and nourishes us and our neighbors together. So where are you hungry? Let that be the place that you are encountered by God, the God of five loaves and two fishes, who turns things into abundant life where there is none. May we know with all the saints what is the height and depth and breadth and length to know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge, so that we may be filled with all the fullness of God. Amen.